Welcome to Kuvera's weekly digest on the most critical developments related to business, finance and the markets. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. The week gone by was yet another sad reminder of how ephemeral and impermanent life can be. You may have all the money and power in the world, but when death comes knocking at your door, none of that will be enough to avert the inevitable. 7 decades after acceding to the British throne, Queen Elizabeth II died on Thursday, aged 96. Her death marks the end of what came to be known as the Second Elizabethan Era, which began in 1952. She has now been succeeded by her eldest son, who, at 73, has taken over as King Charles III. India, too, saw a high-profile demise late last week, when billionaire businessman and former Tata Sons chief Cyrus Mistry died in a car crash along with a family friend. Mistry, 54, is survived by his wife and 2 children, and died just over 2 months after the demise of his father and one of India's most prominent Parsi businessmen, Shapurji Palonji Mistry, in June this year. In fact, Mistry's sudden death came just weeks after India Incorporated lost one of its poster boys, Rakesh Jhunjhunwala, who left behind a $5.5 billion fortune. Mistry's death was also eerily reminiscent of how Princess Diana, the former wife of King Charles III, had died in 1997, in a car crash in France, while she sat on the back seat, apparently not wearing a seatbelt. Mistry was the son of the multi-billion-dollar construction company the Shapurji Palonji Group. But the reticent businessman was known more for his stint as the chief of Tata Sons, which ended in 2016 in an ugly public spat and a legal battle after he was fired and removed from the board of the conglomerate. The public mudslinging and the bitterness of the last few years between the Tatas and the Mistry family were clearly not forgotten, as none of the Tatas, except Ratan Tata's stepmother, the 92-year-old Simone Tata, was seen at Mistry's funeral. The only silver lining in this horrific tragedy perhaps is the fact that it has brought to focus the issue of road safety in a country where more than 1.5 lakh people lose their lives to deadly accidents each year. Road Transport Minister Nitin Gadkari said in the aftermath of the accident that seat belts will be made mandatory for rear seat car passengers as well. Talking of the Tatas, the conglomerate may soon be looking to make the iconic iPhone in India. If news reports are to be believed, the Tatas are in talks with Bistron Corp, a Taiwanese supplier to Apple Incorporated, to set up an electronics manufacturing joint venture in India that will assemble iPhones in the country. The Tatas hope that if these discussions succeed, they could make the conglomerate a force in technology manufacturing and indeed the first Indian company to assemble iPhones, which are currently mainly assembled by Taiwanese manufacturing giants like Bistron and the Foxconn Technology Group. Not only could a potential deal benefit the Tatas, it could also challenge China's dominance in the electronics manufacturing industry, which has anyway been hit in the wake of the pandemic-induced lockdowns as well as owing to trade tensions with the US. Talking of firsts, in what is a clear sign of the growing penetration of the stock markets into the Indian economy, the number of Demat accounts in India crossed 10 crore in August after 22 lakh more accounts were opened during the month. In fact, the number of Demat accounts has more than doubled since the coronavirus outbreak. India had 4.09 crore Demat accounts in March 2020. Record low interest rates, the need to supplement income as the lockdown led to job losses and hurt businesses, a lack of investment avenues, and time at hand have pushed retail investors towards the stock market. The trend was also fueled by the ease of opening an account, the rise in mobile and data penetration and a drop in brokerage fees, with a significant proportion of the new investors coming in from smaller towns and cities. Interestingly, the number of Demat accounts is far greater than the number of people who file income tax returns in India, less than 6 crore. Now, that's a number the government would really want to see growing. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman said this week that inflation wasn't a red-letter priority and that the government was focused more on job creation and wealth distribution. The comments come at a time when inflation has remained well above the central bank's comfort zone for many months and the government is facing flak for the lack of jobs as well as growing inequality in what is now the world's 5th biggest economy. Elsewhere, Indian bankers are worried that credit growth seems to be outpacing deposit growth. News reports say that since May, while retail deposits grew by 2.5%, credit growth soared 15% as of July end, on a year-on-year basis. One key reason for this is perhaps the fact that banks have not been passing on the interest rate hikes to their deposit accounts. While policy rates went up by 140 basis points during the period, bulk deposit and retail deposit rates have gone up by 120 to 200 basis points and 40 to 80 bits per second, respectively. This means depositors continue to get a negative interest rate despite rising interest rates. Little wonder, then, that India's traditionally FD-loving investors are now flocking to the country's stock market. While deposit rates may be struggling to inch up, the markets ended the week firmly in the green, with both the benchmark indices, Sensex and Nifty, ending the five-day period more than 1% higher. The Nifty stocks that gained the most this week were Adani Ports and Special Economic Zone, lenders Yes Bank and Axis Bank, cement makers Ultratech Cement and Grasim Industries, and FMCG and tobacco major ITC. The top Nifty losers during the week were state-owned natural gas transporter GAIL India, automakers Bajaj Auto, Tata Motors, and Maruti Suzuki, and fertilizer maker UPL.